The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Mercy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along to The Punt Podcast here with William Hill, Dave Kellner in situ, and ready to talk football betting. We're going to spin through the five live televised games in the Premier League with the assistance of Derek McGovern and William Hill's Andy Excel in a few moments. We'll have bets from the Football League as well. Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross on hand to give you their best bets this weekend. Alex Dunn is going to give you a selection in Europe as well, and we are going to be speaking to Jonathan Northcroft, the Sunday Times football correspondent, about the sad incident on a Saturday night at the King Power Stadium. Jonathan wrote the book Fearless, the amazing underdog story of Leicester City, the greatest miracle in sports history, and following the sad death of Vichai, the man known as the boss at Leicester City, we will reflect on the legacy he leaves behind him of that unbelievable title winning season just a few years ago. And we're going to speak about the next Real Madrid manager on this podcast as well. That's all to come later on. But first, it's a good morning to Derek McGovern. Good morning to you, Derek.
Good morning. You're lucky to have me here. I've been out all week spending my winnings on yet another winning nap. So I still haven't heard the updated table yet from you, Dave.
Well, would you believe it, Derek? I tried to compile the results this morning before coming into the studio.
No, I don't believe it. Don't believe it.
And I forgot to save last week's Excel document. So I'm going to have to listen back to the previous week's podcast just to confirm.
The Excel document.
Just to confirm that you had that winning nap. But you went through that dry spell, Derek, and then you've bounced back the last couple of weeks.
I think the dry spell lasted about a week, Dave. Come on.
Andy Excel joins us on the podcast as well. Andy, good morning to you.
Good morning. This is the last week we'll hear from Derek, because obviously he'll be taking over at Real Madrid.
Well, if they're going for Roberto Martinez, I think Derek stands every opportunity of being the next man at the helm at Real Madrid. We'll talk more about that later on this edition of the podcast. Let's get stuck into the betting for the Premier League weekend, starting with Bournemouth versus Manchester United. 12:30 kickoff on Saturday for this one. Bournemouth 13-5 to win the game. The draw 14-5 with Manchester United 19-20. Enhanced odds, Callum Wilson to score and Bournemouth to win was 9-2. That's been boosted out to 5-1. He's got 5 in his last 10 Premier League games, Callum Wilson. And if you fancy Paul Pogba to score in a Manchester United win, that was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 100-30. Derek, let's start with you here. You were pretty keen on Manchester United last weekend against Everton, and they won that game more convincingly, I think, than the scoreline suggests. And Anthony Martial is now playing his best with that prospect of a new contract on the table. Not that I'm suggesting there's any correlation there, Derek, but he's really impressing at the moment, Anthony Martial.
Well, not before time. Given all the headlines he garnered when he first arrived, a decent goal, I think he scored in his first 6 weeks, and he was the next big thing, as everybody is when they score a goal for Man United and then they disappear without trace for the next 4 years, which is largely what Martial has done. But yeah, he's the only shining light in that United team right now. Does that entitle him to start at odds on at Bournemouth? Does it tell? I've never seen odds which underline more starkly how important a reputation is to odds compilers. Man United are below Bournemouth in the Premier League table, deservedly so. Right now, they're not as good a team as Bournemouth. They're away from home, and yet their odds on Bournemouth at 13-5. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. United have won one game more this season than Brighton, and that's an absolutely frightening statistic, especially if you're Brighton. It's just I can't believe these odds. And anybody who backs the United with their odds on in this match wants their head feeling.
We know, Andy, that the league table tells lies throughout the season. Derek has just said that Bournemouth are a better team than Manchester United. That can't be true, can it, Andy?
Well, they might be a better team as a unit, but they haven't got better players, and that's the thing. And the United did show signs of finding some form last week. But I'm like Derek, I wouldn't want to back them at odds on against... Because what we were saying about last week's game was United were 3-4 at home to Everton, which was a bit big. Now, they're only a fraction bigger here against, arguably, a team that's playing better than Everton at the moment, Bournemouth. So I couldn't be backing United, but Bournemouth are in decent form. United seem to be finding some form. So I'd be sitting on the fence with the biggest price of the three, the draw.
I think what's impressed me most about Bournemouth is we know all about Eddie Howe and the way his sides attack, but defensively they've improved this season as well. They've kept a clean sheet in each of their last three Premier League games. They've never kept four clean sheets consecutively in the top flight, Bournemouth. If you do fancy them to keep that run going and perhaps to win to nil this weekend, Bournemouth to win to nil is available at 5-1. So let's get your bets here then. Derek, you're going straight with Bournemouth?
Yeah, Bournemouth 13-5. I just think it's a knocking bet. They will win.
14-5 for the draw for you, Andy.
Yeah. Just on the subject of Martial, he robbed Wilfried Zaha of the Tom Daly diving prize last week, by the way.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. That was never a penalty. 6-4 he is, by the way, to score any time.
The best French diver since Jacques Cousteau, Anthony Martial. Few heroes in the United lineup.
Let's move on to Arsenal versus Liverpool. Saturday 5:30. This one, game of the weekend, undoubtedly. Arsenal 9-4 to win it. The draw 11-4. Liverpool in the betting at 11-10. Enhancements: Alexandre Lacazette to score in an Arsenal win was 19-5. That's been boosted to 9-2. And Mohamed Salah to score in a Liverpool win was 15-8. That's been boosted to 21-10. As ever, this is hashtag your odds as well. So if there's a bet that you like the look of that's not on the William Hill website or on the app, tweet using that hashtag your odds to at William Hill. As a neutral here, you two gentlemen aren't neutrals. As a neutral, I'm expecting a lot of entertainment in this game. There have been 27 goals in the last five meetings between the two sides. And Arsenal's matches this season, Andy, under Unai Emery, are producing goals at both ends. You can't see this one being anything other than over 3.5. I can't anyway, Andy.
No, you'd think there'd be goals in it. I mean, what needs to be remembered, without giving Arsenal too much grief about the defence, he hasn't been able to play his first choice back four all season. I mean, he's got right backs playing left.
He hasn't got one.
He's got right backs playing left back. He's got midfielders playing left back. He's got Rob Holding playing, need I say any more. You know, he's done well to get the results he has with that. I think this could well end up in a score draw. But what did stand out to me, and I sort of mentioned this last week, Arsenal haven't been very good in the first half all season.
No, yeah.
Liverpool are 8-5 to win the first half.
I don't think they've led at half-time all season long, Arsenal. I think that's starting the lead up to this game. So Liverpool maybe to be ahead at the break at... what did you say the price was? 8-5, Andy?
Yeah.
8-5. I'm a little bit surprised as well, Derek, that Jordan Shaqiri didn't start against Cardiff. He's looked absolutely brilliant in the last month or so. Do you expect him to start in this game? Are Liverpool too short at 11-10?
No. I don't know if they'll be ahead of half-time, but they'll be ahead of full-time. We'll come back to Shaqiri in a minute. I mean, it's just great to see Arsenal finally playing someone decent for once. These are the teams, you know, in a supposedly brilliant run they've had. These are their opponents: West Ham, Cardiff, Newcastle, Forsyth, Poltava. That was a big one. Everton, Brentford, Watford, Carabag, Fulham, Leicester and Palace. Every one of those teams has the same prefix, the likes of. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. The fixture list has been so kind to them. They've only played two decent opponents, but both at the beginning of the season. Lost them both. This is the third decent opponent. And guess what? They'll lose this as well. Liverpool scored 7 against them in 2 matches last term. Over 2 matches, a total of 7. They could get 7 in this game. I'm all over Liverpool. I'm not saying Liverpool are playing brilliantly at the moment, but they don't have to beat Arsenal. They'll score a few goals. But you know, when we're talking about a million goals in this game, well, we all expected that in the Liverpool-Man City game a few weeks ago, and that finished 0-0. I'm not saying this will be the same, but, you know, I always caution against going heavy on goals because sometimes managers set up differently, you know. And one thing I would say about Liverpool, they were the great entertainers last season, and yet in a few months they've turned into one of the most boring sides in the Premier League. You know, don't get worked up by that, putting four past Cardiff. That's no great shakes. I've seen them a few times before that, and I'm actually thinking I don't want to watch Liverpool at the moment. That said, they'll still beat Arsenal. That's all that matters.
By the way, Liverpool have scored at least three in each of the last five meetings against Arsenal. If you fancy Liverpool to get three or more in the game, that's available at 9-4. You said you were going to come on to Shaqiri, Derek.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Shaqiri, he's a tremendous player. I mean, even when I watched him at Stoke and he was getting all kinds of stick from people who said he doesn't work, etc., etc., he's just got class stamped all the way through him. And whenever Liverpool are playing at Anfield, I want Shaqiri playing because we know how teams are going to set up against them, and that's been Liverpool's big bugbear. They couldn't break teams down. With Shaqiri, you're always likely to. I love him. I think he's sensational. Whether he'll play against Arsenal, I don't know, because Arsenal are not the opponents that you might need a Shaqiri against. You'll need the Salahs and the Manes, the people who are going to be quick on the break. So I've got a feeling he won't play in this game. But yeah, you're right. He's a great player.
On to Wolves versus Spurs then. 7:45 kickoff on Saturday night. Wolves are 9-4 to win it. The draw 5-2. Spurs are shared of odds against here, 6-5. Enhancements, Raul Jimenez to score and Wolves to win was 9-2. That's been boosted to 5-1. Harry Kane to score in a Spurs win was 2-1. That's now 9-4. Spurs beat West Ham 3-1 midweek in the Carabao Cup, but I think the main focus ahead of this game will be their loss against Manchester City. I watched that game, Derek, and I've got no idea what to make of it. I didn't think Spurs played well at all, but they had chances to rescue a point through Harry Kane and Eric Lamella. Was that down to Spurs' quality, or was City just unbelievably complacent on that terrible surface at Wembley on Monday night?
Well, it was a headache watching that game. With that. I mean, how a Premier League match going out worldwide can get into that state of affairs was absolutely diabolical. I've always said that in American football, you can confiscate the ball for an hour and no one would notice. Well, I think City did that to Tottenham on Monday. I've never seen it was supposed to be one of the top of the table games, but it was incredibly one-sided until I think just City thought, this is easy, and lost their focus. I was amazed how one-sided that game was. It was men against boys. I have to say, I battered into West Ham last night on the strength of that. I thought they'd give Spurs a turning over, and they didn't. And that was a good result for Spurs on the back of what happened on Monday. And I really don't know which way to look at this game now. There is a chance that I've been overestimating Wolves. I've been talking them up all season, and results beginning to dip a little bit. And it's interesting that Spurs have won five of their six matches away from home this season. They've had a terrible season, everybody says, but they're riding high in the league, won five of six away. They conceded only four goals in those games. And Wolves have only won two of five at Molineux. It's a tough one. Play safe here. Might be the Andy XL MO. Play safe and go for the draw.
The draw's in the betting at 5-2. One stat that I love in the lead up to this game, this comes from Opta. Tottenham are unbeaten in their last 38 Premier League games against promoted sides. They've won 35 of those and drawn the other three. And Wolves, incidentally, the last promoted side to beat Spurs twice in the same season. But that was almost a decade ago now. And Wolves haven't won any of their last 24 Premier League matches against sides starting the day in the top half of the table either. So if you're thinking about backing Spurs, a couple of stats there to help you on your way at 6-5. Have we overestimated Wolves, do you think, Andy? They've slipped to 10th in the table now.
I don't know about that, but when you were going through that stat then, I thought Derek Dugan was going to get a mention. I can only be with Tottenham here. That grieves me to say that ever it does. But yeah, their away form's reasonable. Wolves, I think Derek's right. They're coming off a bit of form, and I can only be with Tottenham here at 6-5.
Alex.
Alex Dunn here with the best bet in Europe this week, and we're going to Germany for Wolfsburg against Dortmund, and we're playing it quite safe, to be honest with you. Both teams to score and over 2.5 goals in the Wolfsburg against Dortmund game is 17-20. Dortmund, we know, are famed for goals this season. Wolfsburg haven't been in flying form, but both teams to score would have landed in every single one of their home Bundesliga games so far this season. Indeed, over 2.5 and both teams to score would also have landed. It also would have landed in 6 of the last 7 meetings between the pair when Wolfsburg have hosted Dortmund, so 17-20 seems a very fair price indeed. That's the best bet on the continent, and I'm going to step on Pete Farry's toes here as well. There's a bet I love in the Championship, and I know I shouldn't be doing this, Pete, but I'm sorry. Nottingham Forest and late goals in their games. The last 10 games that they have played, there has been a goal after the 75th minute. For that to happen in their game against Sheffield United is even money. I hope Pete doesn't get too mad at me for sharing that information. But the best bet in Europe, Wolfsburg against Dortmund, both teams to score and over 2.5 goals.
Let's move on to Chelsea versus Crystal Palace. 4 p.m. kickoff, this one. Chelsea 27-100 here with William Hill. The draw is 5-1. Crystal Palace in the betting at 9-1. The enhanced odds, Eden Hazard to score, Chelsea to win 2-0, 2-1 or 3-1 was 9-2. That's 5-1. If you fancy Wilfred Zaha to score in a Crystal Palace win, that was 18-1. That's been boosted to 22-1 here with William Hill. Chelsea edge past Derby to reach the quarterfinal of the Carabao Cup midweek despite conceding 2 goals. The positive for them, though, Andy, is they won't have Gary Cahill at centre-half on Sunday afternoon. To coin a phrase that Derek uses, he stunk the place out on Wednesday night. And Maurizio Sarri is doing a wonderful job with Chelsea. He's really managed to get a tune out of Ross Barkley and Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And Barkley's now scored in each of his last three Premier League games for Chelsea. He is 17-10 to make that 4 straight. And Palace aren't any great shakes at the moment, Andy.
No, they're not. I mean, I know they got a draw against Arsenal last week, but, you know, with the escapades of Wilfred Zaha, I actually don't think that's his surname. I think that's just what he screams when anybody comes anywhere near.
Well, Wilfred.
So, I could only be with Chelsea. I think you're right. I think the new manager's really got players playing, and that's a sign of a good manager when they take players that haven't been performing and suddenly make them better. Which, you know, we've talked enough about Mourinho going the other way with players while Sarri's doing the right things. And it's amazing what these young English players can do when they're given a chance, isn't it? Mm. Chelsea minus a goal would be the way I'd go here. I think that's about 4-6, which isn't the biggest price, but they'll win comfortably here.
It is in the market at 4-6 on the handicap betting, Chelsea -1. Palace haven't won since late September now, Derek, and a much changed side were knocked out of the Carabao Cup by Middlesbrough on Wednesday night. So there's probably not that much optimism within the club at the moment. Roy Hodgson, by the way, your favourite, Derek, he's 16-1 to be the next manager to leave his post. I've seen worse bets than that, despite them picking up a point against Arsenal last weekend.
Yeah, I wouldn't put anybody off that, because there just seems a hopelessness around Palace at the moment. There's no grounds for optimism whatsoever. And generally, whichever team is managed by Hodgson, you feel that. He turned the three lines into the red line when he was England manager. This game, Chelsea certainties, but it won't, you know, you only have to look at the odds to know that. So I put out a bet that you might think, well, that's daft, but bear with me. Evens both teams to score. Now, Palace, in my eyes, are always more likely to score away from home. And if you look at the league table, they've scored 5 away from home in 5 games, only 2 at home. In fact, in all competitions, before Wednesday night when they played at Middlesbrough, a much-changed team, and it was in the League Cup, I'm not that bothered about that, they played 8 away matches in all competitions this season and scored in 7 of them. Mm-hmm. This is before Wednesday. They would have scored in all 8, but for missing a penalty at Everton. So there's something they're doing on away from home on the break, maybe, that, you know, makes them a threat. Not a threat to win the game, but a threat to get on the score sheet. So, in a game with very little value around it, I'm going to go for both teams to score at even money.
OK, if you fancy Chelsea to win and both teams to score, that's available at 13-8 as well. So, even money, both teams to score in that match for Derek. And we finished the weekend with a Monday night football Not that many people will be tuning into this one. Huddersfield versus Fulham is the 8 p.m. kickoff on Monday. Huddersfield 13-10, the draw 23-10, Fulham 11-5. Steve Mounier to score and Huddersfield to win was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 100-30. Alexander Mitrovic to score in a Fulham win was 4-1. That's now 9-2. Derek, we've got the team that can't score against the team that can't stop conceding on Monday night. Can you call this one, Mr. McGovern?
Well, yeah, I can call it a relegation six-pointer. That's a certainty. We'll see just how bad Huddersfield are if they can't score against Fulham. I mean, you know, they will. that will be the final straw for them. How bad are these two clubs? Well, papers have already started printing their remaining fixtures. That's how bad they are. I've got to be on Fulham because no matter how bad they are, I don't see them as bad as Huddersfield, and I still think there's more to come from them. Fulham going forward look great. Now, the problem is, at the back, they look equally bad. But you can be equally bad and still beat Huddersfield, equally bad at the back, rather, and still not concede against Huddersfield. So I've got, this is a game, if Fulham are ever going to win a game again, this is it. I've got to be on them. In fact, it's not. It's almost fighting for nap. This one, Fulham.
I like it as well. 11-5, Fulham to win at Huddersfield. Imagine having a home season ticket at Huddersfield this season, Andy. Since they scored against Watford back in April, they've had 76 shots in home Premier League games without scoring. 17 different players have attempted a shot on goal, and they still can't get it in the onion bag. And no team has ever conceded more goals in their opening 10 Premier League games of a season than Fulham. Something has to give in this one, Mr. XL.
Yeah, Fulham, the only team with a worse defence than Roxanne Pallett. it's where do you go with this? Like you say, I generally, in relegation battles, go with the team that can score goals, and that's Fulham. So I'd have to be with you two here. Fulham at 11-5 is probably the bet, but without any confidence whatsoever, because they could easily ship three even against Huddersfield.
No one's going to be backing Huddersfield. From a William Hill betting perspective here, no one's going to be backing Huddersfield at 13-10, though, are they?
Well, I was trying to think about this. This was a Championship game a couple of seasons ago, and it will be a Championship game again next season in all likelihood. And if it were a Championship game, would it be priced that way? And that's basically saying that Fulham are better than Huddersfield at these prices, because the home team would be 11-10 if they were equal. And so I think if it was a Championship game, I might back Huddersfield. That sounds weird.
Right.
But, as it's this game and Huddersfield are going to be trying to win, I think that could leave themselves open, and Fulham will probably just nick it by like 2-1, 3-2, something like that.
Okay, 11-5 Fulham for both Derek and Andy. Let's talk naps then, chaps, to finish this section of the podcast. Derek, do you want to lead us off this week?
Yeah, just before I give him a nap, there was just one game caught my eye. The Everton-Brighton game, which I'm a little surprised I'll catch anybody's eye. You know what, a couple of weeks ago I gave Alex Gunn a load of stick because Liverpool played Huddersfield and he was advocating Huddersfield to have more corners than Liverpool.
That bet didn't land, by the way.
It didn't land. No, but and then he chickened out a bit at the end, and then said, "I mean Huddersfield with plus two in the corners market." That didn't land either. Right. Well, I'm not interested in corners normally, but I was just reading some stats earlier today. Take Man City out of the equation because they're freaks. Everton have had more corners than anyone in the Premier League this season.
Well, that's 63 interesting.
63 in 10 games, which is quite remarkable. Brighton have had the fewest by a million miles, about 32 or something. So I was looking for that better, Andy. Everton minus something on the corners, but I can't find it in the Hills market. I can't find it anywhere. So, you know, that's something for punters to look out for near the kickoff if on the corner handicaps. It's Bournemouth 5-2 to beat Man United.
To beat Manchester United at
5-2.
Yeah, 5-2.
It was 13-5. It's been cut. They've been cut since I've been on. Since I've been talking them up.
Okay. There you go. I see it on screen now. 5-2, Bournemouth to win that game. Andy,
Liverpool 8-5 at half time against Arsenal.
I like it. Liverpool to be leading at the break against Arsenal, which is 8-5, and you'll find that market in the half markets. on the William Hill website. Just loading this one into the slip. There you go, 8-5 Liverpool. I'm going to go with... I found it very difficult this weekend. I'm going to go with Fulham on Monday Night Football to beat Huddersfield at 11-5. So Bournemouth at 5-2, Liverpool 8-5, Fulham Liverpool to win the first half at 8-5, and Fulham at 11-5. That treble just under 30-1, 28.12-1, that treble. Andy, thank you for your company.
Pleasure.
Derek, you're going to stay with us. We're speaking to Jonathan Northcroft from the Sunday Times on the back of this.
Check out the all-new Bet Boosts on your sports Accas. You can boost trebles and bigger with a maximum stake of £20. You get one every day on mobile or the new WilliamHill.com site. Just click the boost button on your bet slip.
Now it's a delight to welcome the Sunday Times football correspondent Jonathan Northcroft onto the podcast. I wish it was in better circumstances, Jonathan. But unfortunately, we've got to talk about what happened on Saturday night and the loss of five people in the horrible helicopter crash at the end of the game at the King Power Stadium, including the man known as Vichai, the boss at Leicester City, who built a legacy with that title-winning season a few years ago. And you wrote the book Fearless, the amazing underdog story of Leicester City, the greatest miracle in sports history, Jonathan. So you're obviously in the perfect position to talk about the man's legacy.
Yeah, and what a legacy it is, Dave. When you think that when Vichai arrived and bought Leicester in 2010, they were a club that wasn't long after they'd been in near administration. They'd been in League One for the first time in their history in 2008-09. They were under the stewardship of Milan Mandrić with all that involved, and had really been sort of drifting as a club, which had had, you know, great days under Martin O'Neill, but had sort of lost its way a little bit. And Vichai came along at a time when foreign owners weren't particularly popular in English football. Fenkes had the spell at Blackburn, which wasn't going very well. Mandrić himself was one of those that wasn't particularly liked by supporters. And you fast forward 8 years for Leicester to be sitting there as former Premier League champions, having got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, with a beautiful stadium, one of the best atmospheres in England, with a £100 million training ground coming on stream, able to spend £30 million on transfers to you know, buying top young English stars like James Maddison. And a community that I think, you know, I live in Leicester, that we've seen in the last week has really, this football club is so much at the centre of things and has really found deep meaning in what Vichai represented and what he did and how he changed things in their city. It's an incredible story, really. It's tragic that it had this awful events on Saturday as part of that story. But what an incredible sort of 8 years it was under Vichai.
Yeah, and the title of your book, poignant as well, because it was really the greatest miracle in sports history, Leicester winning the Premier League. And I think a lot of clubs or the fans of clubs dislike their chairman, but you just see the outpouring of emotion, not just from the fans, from the players as well. Lots of poignant messages left for Vichai. The one from Kasper Schmeichel in particular, really touching tribute to the man.
Yeah, one of the things that was different about him as a chairman was the closeness that he had with his players. And it wasn't a sort of forced thing, a false thing. It came from his personality. It came from how he ran the club, as he always said, like a family, family. He did lots of favours to players, the small, you know, acts of personal kindness to them and their family that meant a lot. He looked after people like Jamie Vardy, like Kasper Schmeichel, as a bit of a father figure. You know, I've spoken to Peter about this. I know Peter quite well, and he always appreciated how Vichai, how his son was in great hands in a club run by Vichai. And
even the newer players like Harry Maguire or Ben Chilwell or James Maddison, he had the personality that a quiet kind of unassuming, but you know, I guess just a warm personality that when he was around the dressing room, when he was there at the club, really infected players, and even the newer, younger ones feel a great sense of loss because he meant something to every one of them.
And I know his son is also heavily involved in the football club, Jonathan. So can you see them progressing as they have done in the last decade or so?
Yeah, I mean, when they won the title, and this maybe sums up Avicii and his son, top three things. You know, he gave an interview and didn't give many interviews, but he immediately said the challenge was for Leicester to get better. You know, this wasn't some kind of, you know, innocent dreamer. This was a guy who built up a duty-free business from nothing to something worth $4 billion. You know, he was very, beneath it all, he was very ambitious in business and for his club, and that's the challenge. The agenda that he set for Leicester was to get better as a club after winning the title. So it didn't mean winning more titles, but meant actually building the infrastructure that it actually lacked when they became champions. And Klopp, Iwobi's son, has always been a driving force at the club because he's a real football fan. He was the one that brought his dad along in the first place and has been the more closely involved in the front end of football decisions, like appointing managers and so on, working with John Rudkin. So he's got an enormous burden, I guess, because he's also got the King Power Empire to run. But as a figurehead for the club, as someone with vision to drive it forward, I think the legacy will very much continue under him.
Yeah, fingers crossed it does. Let's move on. We're going to talk about the situation at Real Madrid next, with the sacking of Julen Lopetegui, and we've got betting on the William Hill website for next permanent Real Madrid manager, where Santiago Solari, who has taken or is taking care of Real Madrid following Lopetegui's sacking, is the 6-4 favourite. Mauricio Pochettino is 9-4. Roberto Martinez is 9-4. Arsene Wenger 8-1. Guti is 10-1, and it's 20-1 bar. I'll bring Derek in at this point. This has been quite a volatile market, this one, Derek. And overnight, Roberto Martinez, a real springer in the betting at 9-4, which has shocked me, Derek, because I don't think he's any good.
Well, I know you mentioned that earlier in the bulletin, Dave, and I raised an eyebrow because I'm a big fan of Martinez. Yeah, I mean, look what he's done at Belgium. I mean, okay, you've got some great players here, but he's done nothing wrong there. And Martinez made Everton watchable, and not even fans who watched him saw that was possible. I mean, he did, and I couldn't believe he got the sack from Everton, and then he replaced him with all the shower of idiots they've had there in recent years. I mean, I think he's a tremendous manager. And I think he could be just the right answer for Real Madrid, who you can't believe it was only a few months ago they win the Champions League, and now they can't beat, you know, some of the muck that's in the Spanish League. So I think he would be the right man. I don't think Pochettino would be, for some reason. You know, if I was Pochettino, I'd want to be leaving Spurs right now, because there's some funny smells coming from Spurs at the moment. And they look like a side that maybe almost reached the sunlight and didn't quite get there. So if I was Pochettino, I'd be looking to bail out. But if I was Real Madrid, I'd give Martinez a job.
You've got to be the casting vote here, the deciding vote, Jonathan. Roberto Martinez, 9-4. Derek thinks he's a fantastic manager. I think he's next to useless, but Jonathan, right. that's all about the defending with me, and I suppose Real Madrid won't be focused on defending.
Yeah, well, look, as a broadsheet journalist, I'm a professional fence sitter, so I'm going to give you sort of a half and half answer. But I think he played great football at Everton, like Derek, and he was on the verge of something exciting. I thought what actually let him down there was his recruitment, which does let a lot of managers down. He bought some pretty bad players. But at Real Madrid, you don't really buy the players. You know, it's the president runs around doing all that and tends to buy pretty good ones. So that might not be so much of an issue. And if the brief there is to play some great football, handle top players, which he surely did with Eden Hazard and De Bruyne with Belgium, I think he'd be a pretty reasonable fit.
Yeah.
I'd still wonder whether it's... for him, having brought Belgium to number one in the world with the Euros coming up, and you'd have to say them and France would be the favourites. I mean, it does rather seem a risky business taking the Real Madrid job in terms of your career development. So he'd have to think pretty hard about that, I thought. And he's Catalan, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, so that'd be an interesting dynamic there. What about Mauricio Pochettino? Because I kind of agree with Derek. I mean, all this stuff going around about the new stadium, that not being developed in time. They were playing at Wembley on the pitch that the NFL had used the day before. And it doesn't look like that issue is going to be resolved anytime soon. And he's had no money to spend at Spurs as well. Do you think Pochettino might be thinking that the grass is greener over there?
Yeah, I mean, the timing of his remarks about it being at his lowest moment as Spurs manager was very odd when you looked at them having had their best start of a Premier League campaign. Odd until you looked at the fact the Real Madrid job was suddenly vacant. And I don't think it can be coincidental. I wouldn't blame him for being a bit disillusioned. If you look at the net spend table that was published this week, it's just extraordinary that he, you know, five years, 29 million net spend compared to the half billion chunks that the biggest clubs are putting down over the same period. Where can he really take the club in the face of all of that? And then just the stadium, it just really doesn't help. It's just such a kind of dowdy, almost amateurish site, that Wembley pitch. And he will have been told internally, just like the fans have been told externally, but don't worry, we'll be in the new stadium by, you know, first it was September, yeah, then October, blah, blah, blah. Don't blame him for feeling disillusioned. And I don't think he can move until they move to the new stadium, but the summer's going to be the time when Pochettino sort of comes in play, as it were, for big clubs like Real or maybe Man United.
OK, chaps, who do you think gets the job then? Derek? Do you think they go with Martinez at 9 to 4? Jonathan? Yep.
I think Poch at the end of the season, Solari until then.
Okay, Pochettino 9-4 to be next permanent Real Madrid manager. Jonathan, thank you for your company.
No worries. Great stuff, lads.
Derek, thank you.
Pleasure.
And we're going to finish this podcast with a look at the Football League in the company of Al Ross, Gav Poshlowski, but first, Pete Farries.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and for my nap in the Championship this week, I'm going to take Birmingham at 29-10 at the time of recording. They are gigantic at that price. They'd be gigantic at 27-10, at 23-10, they'd be big as well. Derby, of course, travelled to Chelsea midweek, had a cracking game, lost 3-2, played really well, threw everything into the match, and I think this match has all of the hallmarks of an after the Lord Mayor's show affair. Birmingham are the league's most informed side as well. Over six games, they've taken 16 points, and nobody has bettered that. Now, for me, this could, of course, be a draw. Do give yourself some draw no bet value, because that's where my nap lies. It is draw no bet Birmingham at 13-8. A side who barely lose anyway, don't forget, have drawn an awful lot of games this season against a side who, yes, are playing really well, yes, look really good under Frank Lampard, but yes, had a massive, possibly physically and mentally draining game midweek. Birmingham, a definite play for me. My nap, draw no bet at 13-8. Whatever you're backing, very best of luck. Let's hear from Gav Poshlowski and his thoughts on League One.
My challenge with the League One nap, the best I can week in, week out, was to find something odds against. I try to avoid odds on price as best I can. I do like Portsmouth 8-11 to win at Bradford. I do like Sunderland odds on to win away at Plymouth. But my nap is Peterborough at 6-4 to win away at Wickham. Here's the rule with Peterborough. If they're playing at home, avoid them. They are very average at home. One win in six for Peterborough at home. One goal in their last three. Away from home, Peterborough, completely different beast. They have won every single game away from home, bar one, away at Sunderland where they drew 2-2. And the goals for Peterborough away from home, they've scored 4, 1, 5, 3, 4, 2, 2 and 2. Doesn't matter where they go, Peterborough, they play better on the road. Wickham's home form is very good, 9 points out of 9. Wickham at home have scored 2, 2, 3 and 3. This could be an absolute goal fest. You could play Peterborough and over 2.5 goals. You could have a look at over 3.5 goals in this one. Do look at Peterborough and both teams to score. But there's no better side on their travels than Peterborough. Every single game, bar one, away at Sunderland, they have won this season. I'm expecting that run to continue at Wickham. Peterborough, my nap, at 6-4. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
The strange run of results continues in League Two, but one thing's remained constant. Morecambe still lose at home. Their only points on their own turf this season have been against bottom club Macclesfield, a team who'd gone into that fixture with 2 points from their opening 8 games, and against Northampton in just the fourth match of the season, with Northampton having failed to win any of their opening 3. The other 7 games Morecambe have hosted, 6 of them in the league, they've lost. Last season, opponents Yeovil were reliant on their home form, but this season they've become home draw specialists. 6 draws in 8 at home, and yet they are in the top half. Why? Because they've won 4 out of 7 away. Leaders Lincoln, who've won 5 in 8 on the road, are the only team with more away wins. So can someone please explain to me why Morecambe, at home, on a run of 4 defeats in 6 anywhere and with 7 home defeats in 9, is 7-4? And this Yeovil side, unbeaten in 4, they've won 4 of the last 6 on the road, are at bigger price than 6-4. This is being priced up as a near-even contest, and it's not. Yeovil are the nap at 31-20.
That's it for the podcast then, folks. Thank you to everyone who contributed and, of course, to everyone that's listened. Particular thanks goes to Jonathan Northcroft, the FWA guest this weekend, the Sunday Times football correspondent. And if you haven't done already, make sure you check out his book on Leicester's miracle a few seasons ago winning the Premier League. That book is called Fearless, the amazing underdog story of Leicester City, the greatest miracle in sports history. Do check out all the latest betting on the William Hill website ahead of the Premier League this weekend by going to sports.williamhill.com. Also accessible, the latest odds on the William Hill app. Thank you once again for tuning in and listening, and if you're having a bet on the Premier League or any of the English football this weekend, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.